You can do this.
Blah, blah, blah.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Dawson's Creek. Today's episode is Season 6, Episode 13.
Rock Bottom.
And now here are your hosts.
Tara Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hello, Sarah.
Hello, Tara.
Hello, Dr. Peter Burns.
Hello, listeners. Before we get into this episode, a little bit of business. This Thursday, September 2nd, we will be bringing you the August edition of Again With Them. I mean, topics TBD, because we have not listened to any of it yet beyond the intro. They did record a new one. Tori, not mentioned. It's Jenny Garth and Friends, not Amy Sugarman. Rough stuff. So we'll get into that and so much more. We hope you join us.
Yes, we do. But always listen to us, never to them.
Oh, God, no, never.
And this Friday, September 3rd, it's Again With This 302. Let's watch James Vanderbeek in the Hal Ojan production, What Would Diplo Do? That was the Viceland show from 2017, starring the Beak as Diplo, a DJ. Season 1, Episode 1, The Beef, is on Tubi. We will link it in the show notes, and we hope that you join us for our coverage of that.
We are going to be off the following Monday, September 7th, for Labor Day, so we will be bringing 3, not the usual 2, episodes out from the club paywall. That's going to be Again With This 253, 254, and 255. It is the full Cruel Intentions trilogy, or should I say thrilogy? No, I shouldn't. Really, only the first one is good, but we talked about them all. And then that Friday, September 10th, we will be bringing you Again With This 303. Let's watch Michelle Williams and Seth Rogen in Take This Waltz. And if you're like, Seth Rogen, huh? Keep listening. We'll get to it. That movie is on Netflix. If you haven't watched it yet, you should. Join us at againwiththispodcast.com/club for all that information and so much more. Shall we get into this episode, Sarah?
Oh, yes. Let us.
Let's start with our C plot. Maybe Grams should have stayed off screen. Sorry to say it, but it's just how I feel. The show has remembered that Grams exists, and we see her from way above as she sputters out of an old man car, aghast. Conveniently, Jen is walking up just in time to meet her and find out that Grams thinks she and Mr. Smalls just broke up. Jen assumes it's sex-related, but Grams says everything is fine in that department and that any jokes related to Mr. Smalls' surname are inaccurate. I didn't ask. The problem is he wanted her to convert to Judaism. Jen is shocked to learn that Mr. Smalls is Jewish, and so am I, since I assumed that Grams met him at church. His character page on fandom.com does not have any info on that. I'm not going back to check. Sorry. But Jen loyally says Big Baby Jesus would have a fit if Grams turned her back on her faith and that Mr. Smalls is a freak. But Grams sadly says he's not. He's a wonderful man. And then at the stand, Jen is stressed by the silent phones and muses that maybe Grams will call. Jen caught her listening to Lionel Richie, waiting for a call from Mr. Smalls. Clip 2.
I know the drill. My Uncle Bill, his wife, died about a year ago. He was devastated. I mean, they were just like Ozzy and Sharon.
Oh my God. So many Osborne references.
So
please
many.
Stop.
It's so...
Whoever's responsible for this or got the show into this... Like, product placement? You must quit it. I'm begging you.
It's really bizarre. Jen asks if Bill is dating anyone, but apparently he just discovered the internet, so he's kind of into online porn right now. Again, didn't ask. Jen says they should set his uncle up with Grams. CJ says Bill is a freak, but Jen says Grams is too. It'll be fun. This idea is wildly out of character for Jen. Like, setting her precious Grams up with some guy she hasn't even met makes no sense for the character.
No. And that she would do it to try to, like, spend more time with CJ is also, I mean, I guess sort of in character for recent Jen, but just as dispiriting for that.
Yeah. When we see them next, Jen and CJ are on a double date with Grams and Uncle Bill, the latter played by Jeffrey Lewis, the poor man's Robert Pine. You can see him in the visual aids and go, oh, right, that guy I always think is Robert Pine, but isn't. He asks what a beautiful woman like Grams does for fun, and she admits that she likes to go to Las Vegas and gamble. Oh, he loves Vegas, too. When she mentions going with her church group, he draws that he hopes she's not one of those religious broads. She says she is religious, but would prefer he not call her a broad. But it's not demeaning. He called his wife a broad twice a day for 22 years. How lovely for her, says Grams. And believe it or not, it gets worse. Clip 3.
Holy Moses.
What?
I think there's a pubic hair in my suit. Take a look at this. Does that look like a pubic hair to you?
I don't know, Uncle Bill. Just keep it down.
Okay, maybe it's not one, but it's definitely some kind of hair. Antisocial perverts.
Disgusting.
All right, lady. What's your problem?
Excuse me?
Well, you're a real downer. I mean, you're just sitting here staring into your soup, and every once in a while you mumble some derisive comment when you should be going to see your doctor.
What are you talking about? Why should I go see my doctor?
Well, so you can remove that polar ice cap you got wedged up your butt.
Oh. Okay.
I mean,
what
saloon are they at?
Exactly. Yeah,
I just noticed the ragtime being pounded away in the background. Like, okay, welcome to the Deadwood Country Club. What the fuck? Also, that is terrible joke writing. Like, I just think Graves would be like, not amused.
Mm-hmm.
And call a waiter over. There should not be a hair of any kind in your soup. And why is this happening to us? Why?
Ugh. Anyway, sadly, there is even more. The foursome returns to Graham's house, Bill telling her he's not ready to call it a night. They do Irish accents at each other as they agree to go for a walk together. And as they leave, Jen comments to CJ that the setup wasn't such a bad idea after all, if only she was insightful with her own love life. CJ says she doesn't do so bad. The last boy she liked slept with her friend, Jen notes, and she punished herself by cutting these violently short bangs. Just kidding, she only says the first part. CJ says that if he had known Jen then, like he knows her now, it wouldn't have happened because he could not bear the thought of hurting someone so amazing. And like, I don't know what he would say has changed based on what we've seen on screen. Like, nothing really.
Yeah.
He leans in to kiss her. She not only swerves him, but turns all the way around and starts walking in the other direction. CJ comments that he deserves that, and he does, but Jen is just doing a bit, and she returns on her tippiest tiptoes to kiss him, because he is tall for real, and she is wee, and he does not deserve her, but when she's happy, I'm happy, so fine, I guess.
Yeah.
On to the B-plot. Dawson's plot line is as annoying as it is implausible. On the soundstage in L.A., we watch Natasha and a co-star, not Max, he is gone forever, fooling around by a car as she giggles and tells the guy no means no until clip 4.
And cut! Awesome. Check the gate. We're moving on.
Moving on to what exactly?
Next scene.
I see. So I guess you weren't planning on getting any coverage here.
I'm sorry. I got excited. I said next scene, I meant next shot.
Which is?
I'm thinking dueling overs.
Interesting. Because I'm thinking that's not going to work. It's impossible to light dueling overs. What else you got?
Okay, what would you suggest?
I don't know. A couple of years of film school, maybe. That chair doesn't make you a director, kid.
I mean, it does as far as the people who pay you are concerned. So maybe get on the bus or be under it.
Yeah, I don't know if there is a better way to do this dumb idea, honestly. Like, I do think they have to acknowledge, like, no one on set would probably respect him.
Oh, sure.
But, you know, I don't know if it would be any different if Heather had, like, introduced him and been like, here's what's happening. Everyone get on board. He has the full support of the studio because of XYZ. This just has to happen. I guess, but it's all fruit from the annoying tree.
If you're going to continue overriding him, then have some other suggestion or you will not make the day and it's just going to be miserable for everybody.
Mm-hmm. Although, presumably, that's the idea, that he's trying to undermine Dawson so that he could maybe get this job. Mm-hmm. Who knows?
Oh, yeah. True.
None of that is text. This is just me speculating. Whatever. Natasha's been watching this dispute and strolls over to needle Dawson and his frantic hair, which you can see in the visual aids, about her shitty new pages.
Poor Dawsonling.
It's rough. Clip five.
You don't like it?
I hate it. Who wrote this crap?
Oh,
who wrote this?
He wrote this. Dawson sighs that he wrote this crap. In that case, Natasha would love him to say some of it smarter. And that's when Dawson's phone rings. It is the off-screen Gale. Before he can hustle her off, we can tell from his answer that she's just asked him if he's eating properly, which makes Natasha smirk. Once Dawson's hung up, Natasha says the new pages imply that her character is about to get naked. Clip six.
Yeah, studio wanted a little bit of gratuitous teening, but don't worry, I plan to shoot it very tastefully.
Oh, good to know, Dawson. But I'm not getting naked.
What do you mean?
I don't do nudity, but no buts about it. Not getting naked. No means no, you know?
This would have been negotiated in your contract.
Yep.
This actor, as written, would not have it in her contract, but sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, even someone of Natasha's stature, which we're obviously not supposed to think is high, would have those terms established. And also, if they hadn't, she would have some pretty strong leverage at this point in the production to negotiate that for like a, mm-hmm. you know, a big bump. But what do I mm-hmm. know? When we rejoin Dawson later, he is messing with the camera, trying to look like he knows what he's doing when Heather stops by to yell at him. Clip seven.
You're behind. The dailies are weak. It was supposed to be 3 days of reshoots. Now looks like five. You have a meltdown on your hands here, Dawson. How you deal with this will define your career. Other than that, keep up the good work, sweetie pie.
Sure.
I mean, I feel like a lot of that shit is stuff you could have avoided if you hired a professional director to do this and not this child. Ma'am?
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, once she is stomped off, Dawson calls Todd's office. The assistant who replaced Dawson pretends not to know who Dawson is, even though Dawson trained them, and they won't say where Todd actually is, or call Todd's cell for Dawson, which Dawson presumably could have also just done himself.
Yeah.
This is the point of cell phones. Natasha comes over to hassle Dawson some more about his thinking Todd would swoop in and save him. She's also pissed that her next scene is full of exposition. He says they need to fill in all the stuff they cut. Natasha thinks they can accomplish it with a look between her character, Claire, and the killer. Dawson is like, a look, and Natasha responds by using the R slur at him two times, and not in the way of Joey using it earlier in the Christmas episode, which also wasn't great, but at least seemed to mean delayed as opposed to mm-hmm. what it means here, which is dumb. Bad. It's 2003. Then she says he has to figure it out because she's not saying all that stuff. And then Frank, the DP, checks Dawson's shot and wanders off scoffing disgustedly, leaving Dawson to wince into another commercial break. And when we rejoin him, he is outside the stage, leaning over a trash can in classic about to hurl posture. As Natasha notes when she spots him on her smoke break, she doesn't even care how he is, so she shouldn't bother asking. He pouts. She claims she never wanted him to puke his guts out over this. That's what happens when you watch your life's ambition disappear before you, he replies. When he has directed before, it was nothing like this. And she says, of course it wasn't. He's not making a silly little movie with his silly little friends, and no one here owes him their respect. Dawson has to earn it. If he walks around like a deer in headlights, he'll get run over. Dawson, in a daze, thanks her, but she tells him just to get his act together. Not bad advice, honestly. Back on the stage, Dawson tells Frank the shot he has lined up isn't the one they talked about. Frank says the one they talked about sucks, and this one kicks ass. As Heather and her clearly empty cup look on, Dawson makes his angry dandelion face and then goes up to another guy asking if he could do Frank's job. The other guy says sure, in theory, so clip eight.
Excellent. Frank!
Yeah?
You're fired.
What?
You heard me. You're fired.
You're kidding me, right?
You're next.
Anyone else want to get fired? Huh? Anyone? All right, we're starting over. Allow me to introduce myself. My name is Dawson Leary, and I'm the director here. If anyone has a problem with that, get the hell off my set and stop wasting my time. Natasha, this is the script. Familiarize yourself with it, because unless you want to keep all these good people away from their families, you're going to say every single word that's on those pages, and I could care less whether you agree with them or not. Are we clear?
Couldn't care, but yes, we're clear.
Mm-hmm.
Crystal, someone should have said.
Natasha, by the way, smiles proudly. Is he going to try to get her to do nudity she and her team did not agree to? Don't know. It's unclear.
They might be rehearsing it later.
True. Dawson bellows that if everyone else present doesn't get on board, he will fire them and humiliate them, and he will do it well because he learned from the master. And then he sits back in his chair as Heather tells him he was seconds from being fired himself. I would love to know when she's going to get fired, because this was her choice. I mean, figure it out. But anyway.
And if you're spending this much time on the set over his shoulder, just do it yourself.
Yeah. Then Dawson wraps for the day and gets a bunch of congratulatory handshakes before plopping into his chair, whereupon Natasha comes over and starts rubbing his shoulders. I guess it's good to be king. He's sorry he had to yell at her, but it kind of turned her on. Does he want to get a drink? That was easy. And speaking of easy, just kidding. When we see them again, they're in Dawson's hotel room the next morning as she heads out to an audition, clip 9.
The last couple days have been great, Dawson, but I have auditions and meetings coming up and...
Don't worry about it.
Well, maybe in a couple weeks when things are less crazy, we can...
Natasha, it's okay.
Really?
Yeah. Let's not be those people who make false promises to each other when they both know the truth.
Which is what?
That you were right all along. This is about sex, which is not the worst thing in the world. I just wasn't used to it. Every relationship I ever had I've taken so damn seriously, I think I just forgot how to have fun.
Well, I'm glad I came along to remind you.
Me too.
We will meet again, you know.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. You'll be directing some big movie and be kind enough to throw me a bone and cast me. Then we'll have another fabulous whirlwind romance, which will totally screw up both of our marriages, but it'll be totally worth it.
Ah, that sounds about right. Except the part about me directing a big movie one day.
You'll get there, Dawson. I have a feeling about you. Which makes me wonder if I was wrong about us, because the other day, watching you take control of the movie, I don't think I've ever been so proud of anyone in my life. Then again, I could have just been turned on by your vulgar display of authority.
Probably. Sure. Everyone read Maureen Ryan's Burn It Down. This is not cute or funny.
No.
Don't model this.
No. But they kiss a bunch, and then Natasha tells Dawson there will be other actresses, but he can't forget she was the first. And at his starry-eyed handsomest, which you can see in the visual aids, Dawson promises he won't. On to the A-plot, Joey hands Audrey a new way to torment Eddie. We open this plot line with Audrey blurting that she doesn't want to go to rehab. She read the brochures, and it doesn't seem fun. Joey, helping her pack, reminds us of the end of the last episode that we just saw in the previouslys. The doctor said Audrey could have died. So just remember that as you hear the rest of the clips from this scene.
Mm-hmm.
Audrey thinks the doctor was being dramatic. She's just another college student who got alcohol poisoning. And considering the content, the tone here is real weird. Clip 10.
Audrey, you have a problem. A big problem. You need help. You need to be around people who love and care about you.
Right, and those people would be?
Your parents?
Yeah. And thanks for calling them, by the way, because that was a fun conversation.
My pleasure.
Don't be so chirpy.
No. Almost died. Almost killed a house. Come on.
All along, they've been writing Joey as if she thinks Audrey's drinking is just another way she's kind of messy and not like it's a potentially dangerous addiction, so... It makes it hard for us to know how seriously we're supposed to take it, even though now rehab has become part of the story. But again, this is just a continuation of what we were complaining about last week. Like, it's badly conceived.
Yep.
Audrey doesn't want to take the sweater Joey's holding because it doesn't show off her rack enough. Case in point, Joey says Audrey is going to rehab to get better, not laid, but Audrey says Ben Affleck might be there. And when I fact-checked it, I guess it was known that he first went to rehab for his drinking in 2001, because I forgot that it was part of his story that far back. Audrey reminds us that Ben Affleck is the sexiest man alive. Okay, but mentioning the magazine reminds her. Clip 11.
Did you pack my Jane magazines? I missed like 5 issues while I was all wasted and whatnot.
Yeah, they're in here along with a stack of InStyle and a tape full of Trading Spaces that I made for you.
Joey Potter, you are a dream.
Don't you forget it.
I won't.
That's some time signposting. Well done.
Yeah, those are very indicative of where we are in culture. Audrey's cab driver calls up. Joey hugs her and tells her to call if she fucks Ben Affleck. Audrey promises to come back sober and a lot more boring. Joey can't wait. Audrey gravely thanks her again for not giving up on her. She loves Joey, who says that Audrey's a royal pain and Joey loves her too. I don't know why Joey would not assume at this point that Audrey's a flight risk and at the very least walk her down and watch her get in the cab, if not accompanying her to the airport and put her on the plane and maybe also get on the plane, but she just hugs her again and leaves Audrey to step into the hall alone and stop there looking haunted. And after the credits, Joey's apparently late for class a fucking again, yelling at her printer to finish a job and then rushing to the door where Eddie and his slightly shorter haircut, slightly but I noticed it, are waiting. She flips from surprised to bitchy in a couple of seconds, asking why he's there. To say goodbye, he tells her. That's not really his style, she snits. Since literally everyone has to affirm Joey no matter what, he has to say she's even more attractive when she's mad, so he's lucky she's mad at him a lot. She tries to stomp past him, but he has been thinking about what she said about taking chances and not giving up on himself, and she was right about everything, so he's going to California. He's going to crash with his sister, who conveniently lives there, and he has an appointment at the writer's workshop, which Hetson even wrote him a recommendation for. He might even have a shot at a scholarship.
But he calls it that school, and he says, I've got an appointment with that school. And then later he's like, remember, I have that appointment with that school. Like, did you shoot these before they named the school in other scenes? Because it's the California writer's workshop. It's not that hard to remember.
No. Now Joey doesn't know how to react, since Eddie is doing exactly what she told him to, but it also means she's not going to get to fuck him anymore, so holding in how devastated she is, she gives him a sincere good for you and asks when he's leaving. And for some reason, Eddie's plan is to start driving across the country alone at night, I guess because he loves sleeping in parking lots. He says he owes Joey big time. He knows she hates him right now, but could he get a hug? She obliges, managing not to cry while he fondles and then smells her hair and kisses her fucking forehead. And then Joey's landline rings. It's Mrs. Liddell, obviously saying Audrey never showed up. Joey says she's going to have to cash in that favor Eddie owes her sooner than he thought, she says. And when we see Joey next, she's at Hotel Grand Mark, pounding on a door that looks like no hotel room has since the early 80s. It's got like... the house numbers that were standard in, I'm going to say, like 1977 to about 1983, that style, you can obviously see him in the visual aids. It's just not convincing.
No.
Joey yells for Audrey, but clip 12.
Where's the food?
Who are you?
I'm Bob.
Sure.
You don't need us to tell you that is obviously Seth Rogen as Bob. You also don't need us to tell you he opens the door in a cloud of presumably weed smoke. Joey shoves past him, asking for Audrey. Is that the blonde girl's name? Bob asks. Joey is disgusted that he spent the night with her without knowing it, but he says they didn't do much talking, if Joey knows what he means, and then adds, we porked, because in case she didn't. And now, he says, Audrey's in the crapper. Joey opens the doors and sees the back of Audrey's head and 3 of her limbs in the tub. She covers her mouth in horror, but soon Audrey startles awake and the 2 of them plus Eddie all scream. And okay, yes, it's a little funny when Eddie is like, ah! Just out of surprise. But again, these hijinks are not funny under the circumstances. Like, it's not that implausible. especially when Audrey says she just fell asleep in the tub. Like, yeah, well, you could have drowned. Like, that's not better than thinking you were already dead.
Yeah.
She snorts at Eddie, saying she thought he and Joey were Splitsville. Joey changes the subject to the rehab Audrey is not at, and Audrey sarcastically congratulates her on her police work and then asks if that guy is out there and learns for the first time what his name is, repeating what he said about not talking the previous night, minus we porked. Audrey met him while she was blowing a crowd away at karaoke with a Guns N' Roses cover. Joey announces that she and Eddie are going to drive her to rehab. Audrey refuses, saying Joey's after-school special routine is giving her dumb chills. I don't know what that means. Then there's this, clip 13.
Fine, don't go to rehab, but at least come with us. I mean, clear your mind or something. I mean, do you really want to be hiding out with the lights?
You guys mind if I pee?
Okay. I'll come on one condition. I get to bring Bob.
No way.
Fine, then I'm staying here.
You don't even like him.
Sure I do.
He's 21, he can buy us drinks.
Bob, I'll have you know, is an outstanding lay.
I am?
Yes, Bob, you are.
Hear that, Veronica? Betty thinks I'm an outstanding lay. Want a piece?
Fine. Bob can come. Get your stuff, we'll be in the car.
So where are we going, baby?
We are going to LA.
Cool. It's where Ozzy lives. You know, you have really beautiful breasts, and someone should tell you that every day. Rub that lotion.
Jesus.
So that's the other Ozzy Osbourne reference. That's actually the first one in the episode chronologically. Were the writers doing like a Ray Dong Chong challenge or something? Like,
I don't know.
It's bizarre, but also Eddie's like 26. He could buy them drinks too. Just saying. After some self-shot footage of everybody in Eddie's car, we see that Audrey and Bob are asleep in the backseat. Eddie nags Joey for not having said anything in the past 4 hours. He would expect her to be grateful for his agreeing to do this. Joey snaps back that he said he owed her big time and it's not like he's going out of his way. But he says it's more about simple human kindness, and I agree with him. But Joey's not going to take that from someone who dropped out of her life without so much as a passive-aggressive email, which, like, guys, you both kind of suck at this point in the story. Yeah. Audrey wakes up groggily, and clip 14.
Where are we?
Somewhere in North Carolina.
Oh, my God. She admitted.
Yeah. But, I mean, also dumb. Like, so you started in Boston.
Yeah.
North Carolina's not really on the way.
No, it's not. I have driven from the Northeast to Los Angeles many times. I've never gotten anywhere near North Carolina. They should be in like Ohio by now.
Yeah. Yes, they should.
Audrey yells that this road trip blows. She hates the classic rock and they haven't stopped to do anything fun. Eddie turns off the radio, which is more gracious than Audrey deserves. And clip 15.
Sally, we're in a rush. We should stop and smell the roses.
Oh, my God.
Oh, God. And, man, what is that?
That's not me. I did not.
I didn't.
What's wrong, sugar?
Oh.
Oh. What is that?
It's you, you freak.
Oh, I'm sorry. My ass was relaxed while I was sleeping.
Oh, God, it's so disgusting. I can't believe that I slept with you.
I can't believe it either, you know. Look, I've been wanting to talk to you about something, okay? You know, when you're done with your whole little rehab thing, if you're in the market for a new addiction, I know this drug called B.O.B. But I'm saying I want to make us work. All
right, well, we'll see about it, buddy.
It's cool. It's really cool.
Yeah, we're going to have to do something about the sex thing, though.
What are you talking about? You told Joey I was an outstanding lay.
It's a little brief, don't you think?
Well, you know, you set one pace. You know, I was doing it nice and slow, and then you went all hellcat on me. I can't do that.
Oh, so it's my fault.
Well, you're just too good at it. That's what it is.
Not good at not breaking in the face of Rogan-Roganing, but yes. I don't even care.
Thank
also
you.
Also farts.
Yes. You can see a few instances of, like, busy and not Audrey, like, just not being able to hide that she's smiling at Seth, not Bob.
Mm-hmm.
Also worth noting, if you're enjoying these two together and have never watched Freaks and Geeks, watch Freaks and Geeks, where she plays Kim and he plays Ron, and they are very cute there as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I really had a hard time getting through this without clipping like 80% or more of Seth Rogen's lines. After some more self-shot B-roll, including Joey actually taking her turn driving, I wouldn't have thought she would want to get her precious hands dirty touching Eddie's squalid Worcester steering wheel. Joey and Eddie come out of a convenience store with snacks to Audrey standing on the hood, and Sarah did a little research on this location.
I did. What a delightful marriage of name and signage. I don't think this signage still exists anymore, but for anyone else who thinks we need a Kicking Mule Gas and Grocery t-shirt, I put a link in the show notes to some news. It's now a package store. Hmm. I think some of the signage, like on the porch, is still the same, but the roadside sign is the best. And if such a t-shirt exists, especially in ringer form, alert me immediately, bunting@tomatonation.com.
Eddie tells Audrey to get down off his hood. It's dangerous and completely disrespectful, but Audrey just scoffs. His car's a piece of crap. Clip 16.
I'm sure it pales in comparison to whatever trendy little BMW you have waiting for you back in 90210 land, but this is all I have.
Don't cross the streams.
Easy. Leave us out of it.
When Audrey shrugs that it sucks to be him, Eddie checks with Joey that it's wrong to hit girls, and she sadly says it is, which, like, it would be for him. Joey could hit her, though.
Mm-hmm.
But when Audrey jokes about Eddie's future pumping gas, Joey snaps that she's not funny and that Eddie is doing her a huge favor. Audrey doesn't know why Joey's in such a hurry to defend him, given his recent shitty treatment of Joey. And then she asks who Joey was just talking to. Joey's like, when? Seeming to have forgotten she is currently holding her cell phone. Joey badly lies that she was checking her messages, so Audrey asks to use it, hits redial, and sees that Joey was, in fact, talking to Mrs. Liddell. Joey lamely says she's worried about Audrey, who doesn't believe it. Mrs. Liddell didn't come back to town when Audrey almost died. She just tried to put her on a plane, and Joey's no better. This road trip idea isn't about Audrey's care. It's about spending time with Eddie. I mean, Audrey's making points. She's being an asshole about it, but she's not totally wrong. And Audrey gets back in the car, Bob yelling at her not to break the seal. Joey walks two steps to Eddie, who is filling the car. Joey apologizes for the mess that is Audrey and admitting that this was not a great idea. Eddie generously says it's more interesting than driving alone, seconds before Audrey starts the car and drives off with the gas nozzle and hose still attached and all of their purchases still on the roof of the car, not for long. Eddie's reaction to this may seem muted just because it's such a nightmare that being crazier than Audrey is clearly not going to help. At least that was my read on him being like, well... And when we return to Eddie and Joey, he is unsuccessfully hitchhiking and suggesting that Joey try. She snaps that she's not going to shake her ass for a ride, which is not what he asked, although if she were willing. She doesn't know how he can joke at a time like this, but what else is there to do? He tried to help someone and ended up carless on the side of the road with someone who hates him. Joey wearily says she doesn't hate him. The two of them were just supposed to be over. So she's saying they're not? She glares at that and then says she wants to talk about Audrey. She can't figure out how to help her. Eddie says Audrey doesn't want anyone's help. Joey mopes that he's probably right, but she's having a hard time letting Audrey go. Eddie says Joey's a good friend. She's like, she's medium. She's suspiciously.
At best.
Joey asks what he's getting out of this. A chance to spend more time with Joey, of course, he says. And she melts a little and then repeats Audrey's accusation of ginning up the road trip to hang out with him. She's having trouble letting Eddie go too, which she knows is stupid and sad given how clear he has been about his feelings for her. Clip 17.
Well, look, I guess I haven't made it clear how I feel about you. And this is probably going to sound... It's going to sound cheesy, but... I've never cared about anyone the way I care about you. But it's too late. I screwed up. But the way I feel about you, I love you, Joey.
We know.
You're right, it did sound cheesy. You know what, Eddie? I can't for the life of me figure out how loving somebody translates into leaving them behind.
You told him to go to this school. Like, make up your mind. Jesus.
Yeah. I mean, okay, first of all, they said I love yous to each other
in the last
inexplicably,
episode.
But still, that did happen. It was an episode ago.
Yeah.
She pushed him to do this and pulled strings she didn't want to pull for him to do it. Yes, he's driving across the country to a school he can't seem to retain the name of, but it is happening because she made it happen. Mm-hmm. He already disappeared on you, so if he does it again, who the fuck cares? But if he doesn't, there is email. There are cellular telephonic devices. Mm-hmm. And why are we, like, maybe I haven't made it clear, but let me just repeat that you're the most perfect woman on earth. Fuck off! Shut up! We did this already. It wasn't convincing the first time. I hate it. Go away.
I mean, there's still amazingly so many episodes with him. Like, I don't know where they can go from here, but they're gonna.
Further up my ass, I guess. We'll find out.
In some podunk North Carolina town that magically happens to have a karaoke bar or night, we join Audrey listlessly wrapping up her take on Total Eclipse of the Heart while Bob passes out on the table. When she heads to the bar for another drink, another patron, identified in the credits as Mullet, compliments her performance. She sarcastically compliments his hair. He invites her outside to see his ride, and Audrey agrees because she thinks her boyfriend will enjoy the story later. But once she gets to his truck and comments on his gigantic tires, she tries to head back inside, but he arm grabs her and invites her to get in to hear the new Metallica on the stereo. She declines. Mullet just wants a little kiss. She can't, she says. She is a famously terrible kisser. All he cares about is getting naked with her, and he still has her by the arm when she turns, and when he tries to stop her, I guess she sobers up instantly, because she kicks him squarely in the balls, and once he's down on the ground, she continues savagely kicking him until Joey and Eddie walk up and separate them. Joey hugs Audrey to calm her down, whereupon, clip 18.
I think I'm ready to go to rehab.
Okay.
Well, I've heard that before. Maybe.
Again, this messaging is very inconsistent and gross, mostly.
And irresponsible, I would say.
Yeah.
Then rural North Carolina self-shot B-roll abruptly gives way to PCH B-roll until they're parking in front of Audrey's parents' mansion. Joey comments that she had no idea, and Audrey shrugs that it's kind of tacky. The one in Malibu is much nicer, which again, his family wouldn't also have a beach house in Florida, and if they have a house in Malibu, why did Audrey need Dawson to give her a lift? Presumably there's a vehicle there or something. Anyway, as Eddie unloads her luggage, Audrey says she would tip him, but she only has hundreds, and when his response is just to glare, clip 19.
Okay, I was kidding that time.
What, as opposed to the 450 other times?
Well, then I was just being a bitch. Sorry about that, by the way. This hasn't exactly been the best year for new people to get to know me.
Yeah, well, once you get past the obnoxiousness and the petty bitchery, you're not so bad, you know? You're kind of funny, Audrey.
Well, you're not so bad yourself, Eddie Dolan.
Now it's your friend over there, thanks.
Are you kidding? Of course she does. Why do you think this is so hard for her? She might not want to give you the satisfaction of knowing this, but you're going to go down in the books as one of the great loves of Joey Potter's life, which, trust me, doesn't suck.
No, most certainly does not.
No, it does. Ask any of the previous occupants of the job.
But also, I don't think he is, just because I think the audience had largely dipped by this point and would never know this guy was on the show, never mind one of her great loves.
No, like, we were out.
Yeah.
And this started our career and our knowing each other.
It's true. I didn't know he was on the show until we got here.
No, I'm seeing all this shit for the first time, like, between now and the finale.
Mm.
It's all new to me.
Yep. Somehow we're supposed to think Joey did not hear any of that while she was sitting beside an open car window 5 feet away when she gets out and offers to go in with Audrey, who nicely declines. As Eddie carries Audrey's stuff to the house, Audrey tells Joey she's not going to say thank you and that she's sorry because she doesn't want to insult Joey with empty words. She's just going to try to get this thing under control when she figures out why she's so frigging unhappy. And again, this is the vague language that reminds us how this storyline was kind of out of the grasp of this writing staff, as well as the younger members of the audience who are not going to, you know, track it properly, but whatever. Joey hugs Audrey and says that when she does get a handle on it, she can remember that everyone in Bean Town loves her to death, which I have to think no one who lives there actually calls
Bean Town. My God, that's some fucking Dave Senior shit.
Yes.
Derogatory. One of the few times, but like Bean Town.
Right.
It's like calling him the Bo Sox. Like, all right, Dad.
Yes.
Love you too.
I don't think San Francisco residents call it Frisco to each other either, but fine.
Mm-mm.
Anyway, Audrey laughs that she couldn't have predicted the skinny, uptight prude she met could become her best friend in the whole world with, if true, yikes.
Yeah.
Audrey tells Joey it's time for her to let Eddie go. Eddie returns, reminding them he has that appointment at that school.
At that school.
Okay. Audrey rouses Bob. He manages not to fart again. At first, she doesn't know what they're going to do with him, then says they can tell her parents they got married in Las Vegas so that her parents get mad about that and forget about the other stuff. But no, they can't have sex again. Well, maybe. And tragically, that's a serious rap on Seth Rogen. Bye, bro. And when we see Eddie and Joey next, it's golden hour and they're strolling in a beautiful oceanside park. I guess he had that appointment at that school off screen and it went well based on him saying how foreign this world is to him and Joey replying that it doesn't mean he doesn't belong there. So he should just ignore the urge to get back in the car and return to Boston. He asks. Yes, as much as Joey wishes he would do exactly that. She says he will be great. And if it doesn't work, he can go back to pretending he's a student. He was thinking about how hard it is to say goodbye and that maybe they shouldn't. They could make a plan to meet somewhere like a year from now. Joey predicts that he will meet a willowy blonde poet first and forget Joey Potter, the drama queen he used to know. What a beautiful dream. Eddie doesn't think so. Clip 20.
So where are we going to meet?
What about Paris? Huh? You've never been to Paris, right? Well, we need to do something about that. I mean, Paris shouldn't be something you could have done once upon a time.
Very nice daydream.
No, it doesn't have to be.
I mean, it probably does, because unless Audrey's parents are going to buy Joey a one-way ticket back to Bean Town, she's going to have to max out her credit card doing that herself.
Yep.
But she tears up a little as clip 21.
Well, Mr. Darling, if something happens and we don't make it to Paris, I want you to know I'm not gonna forget you. You might just be the sweetest, nicest surprise that's ever happened to me. I guess that's my way of saying I love you too. You don't mind, I'm going to keep on loving you for as long as I can.
Who cares? Who cares? You don't care.
Well, she kisses him briefly, and she bravely tries to walk away, but he catches her hand and pulls her back so that we can watch them make out for, like, 45 seconds, and I appreciate the break. I will give them that, if literally nothing else. And that's the end of the episode. Let us close it up by naming our episode MVP.
Bob. It's not close.
No. I guess I got to agree. I mean, I'm tempted to say Frank, but he's such a dick that I can't. So I will agree with you. Bob is an excellent choice, and we miss him already.
We do.
Least valuable player. I love Audrey, but she's pretty bad in this episode, honestly.
Yeah, I'm going to say I don't like to do this because if you do it once, you kind of have to, like, don't break the seal of saying the writers, but the writers. Like, this is terrible messaging of a substance misuse story.
Yes.
Even if you're not sure what you're doing, at least pick one tone. It was bad time management. There's like this, you know, whirling shot of them kissing while they're basically like literally pecking at each other like chickens. It's not sexy at all. This whole like, okay, CJ changed his mind about Jen after she kind of wore him down. Why did she bother doing that? Why do you hate her?
Mm-hmm.
Get her a wig also. Everything about this is unacceptable. And congratulations to Pacey for being absent.
God, I forgot the Jen stuff was in this episode. Damn.
I know.
Let's wrap it up. We gotta go.
Yeah. Next time on Again With This, Felicity Porter ditches Stanford to follow a boy who barely knows she exists to the University of New York. But he looks a lot like a young Scott Speedman, so we get it, and we're gonna go with it. You should get our visual aids. They're free. That's the key screenshots and GIFs for every episode of the Again With This podcast, regardless of shoe. You can find those along with the full archive of the episodes themselves on our website. That's againwiththispodcast.com. I am Freak Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Blue Sky at Sarah D. Bunting. My co-host is Geek Tara Ariano. She's on Blue Sky at Tara Ariano. And you have no idea how close our producer, David T. Cole, came to getting fired. Talk to you next time.
You're on, sister friend.
Oh. Deep cut.